Mini episode 689 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by the Pullins Group, delivering public affairs consulting and marketing services for small businesses trying to grow. Follow them on the web at PullinsGroup.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the History of the Royal Rumble Anthology in the FDH Lounge. Rick Morris and Kyle Ross, your tour guides through history. We are up to 5E 2007. We're looking at that year's Royal Rumble. Again, as we do at the outset of all of these ones, I want to refer everybody back if you want general thoughts on the Royal Rumble, how it came to be, its place in the company, the setup of it, anything. Backstory structure, go to 1A 1988. We'll refer you to that. We have it in the first 10 or 15 minutes there. We don't touch upon any of that stuff. Once we move forward past that, it's all macro level stuff, of which I don't think we have a ton for 2007. And then, of course, micro level for the event itself. We touch upon the undercard and we touch upon, of course, the match itself. And we star right the hell out of that sumbitch. So I'm looking forward to this one, Kyle.
I hope that whatever we did in those first 10 to 15 minutes of part 1A, was good for as much as we reference it, because for the life of me, I can't remember what I said at this point.
So we'll have to play that back at some point.
Okay.
Yeah.
I hope it was good for as much as we reference
it. It better have been. Yeah.
I know, really. What did I say?
Well, we were explaining the structure of it. I think we talked about
the Royal
about
Rumble is a professional wrestling pay-per-view with 30 people with scripted storylines.
Well, I think we talked about the dry run that they did of it to Pat Patterson. Okay. Playing a role and going through it. Royal Rumbles throughout, or Battle Royals, I should say, throughout history. But
okay.
Yeah, we're up to 07. I said 5E. That is the last one of this chapter 5 that we're in, essentially. It is the end of the era of Split Happens. And since you are responsible, Kyle, for delineating the eras here, talk about why 2007 is the end of that era. Let's start on that.
Well, it's tough, isn't it? Because
yep.
It was there. It seemed like there was a lot cleaner dividing lines in the earlier eras, right?
Mm-hmm.
The first part we call the beginning to the best.
Yeah.
That was just a funny way, 88 to 92. That's kind of the old school era, right?
So right.
You know, Hogan is in all of those, is obviously the biggest star. And it's a lot of guys who were popular in the 80s.
Right.
It was still kind of the carryover from that era. Then we did the down years, 93 to 95, which is generally considered, you know, the worst 3 years in company history.
Right.
96 to 99 was Monday Night Wars.
Yep.
Pretty simple why then. You know, there was a very serious competition for best wrestling company in the country at that time with WCW.
That's right.
What did we call 2000 to 2002? I can't remember anymore. That was like that.
Well, you're putting me on the spot here, but it was
What did I even call that? It was like the post. It was like, oh, it was called From the War to the Game.
The War to the Game,
yeah.
That
was my best name, too, I thought. I can't even remember. Yeah, it was the War to the Game.
I knew it had game in there,
yes,
somewhere. Okay.
And that obviously talked about the post,
right,
Monday Night Wars, Triple H, such. And those were the peak,
right,
years, arguably, for the pay-per-view, the Royal Rumble pay-per-view itself. Then we moved. They did the brand extension, so it was very easy to start that at 03. And the brand extension does continue past 2007, past this pay-per-view. And we'll talk more about this actually at the end of the show, I think.
But it gets
a lot softer.
It gets softer than Vince McMahon at full staff after 2007.
Yeah, so we'll go into why I decided to stop in 2007. Part of it is I just didn't want to have one gigantic part where,
sure,
we're doing like part G.
Right.
So I decided to stop here.
Additionally, I noticed this as well, that PG starts in 2008, so that does sort of feel like a little bit of a distinction.
There is,
and it kind of started really with the Benoit tragedy,
yes,
in the summer of 07. So I agree that I think this delineation point, although you're the one that came up with it, I would strongly agree, and I couldn't find a better year to end that era on.
Okay, so you mentioned Benoit, and you're right. That's obviously a huge line of demarcation in company history. There was a huge shift in company mentality after that happened. That was the summer of 07. I do have in my notes, this is the last Rumble show with Chris Benoit. He's not really a significant part at all. So
among other things, again,
the, time we mentioned
the Benoit thing was the first real seed, at least that I can remember, of PG. Because up until this year, I mean, they were still doing a lot of objectionable stuff. Even after Benoit, they were still doing the whole, they'd gotten away from the who killed Mr. McMahon thing to Mr. McMahon's got an illegitimate kid out there somewhere. But that was almost like the last of the overtly bad taste stuff they were doing. It was getting more family friendly. So again, I think you're right on the money here with where you're cutting this.
We also should mention the emergence, for lack of a better term, of a third brand.
Yes.
Here for 2007, that being ECW, which was revived in the summer of 06 based off two strong one-night stand pay-per-views. It was a mistake to do it.
Right.
It's funny now, with the benefit of hindsight, what NXT has become is clearly what ECW should have been. I think they were actually hindered by the initials of ECW because it conjured up such memories for so many people, and it was never going to be that. So they never should have done it.
You know what the funny thing is?
At least they never, if they wanted to, first of all, the roster was too thin to divide into three brands.
Absolutely.
They had issues with two brands.
Right.
Which we've beaten a dead horse in the previous four parts. But calling it ECW was a mistake.
Well, and here's the thing, too. If you look at ECW, or for these purposes, what they would call WWECW, in the latter years, 2009, 2010, it really had sort of become a poor man's version of what NXT is today. They were using it for a lot of developmental talent and for rehabbing some guys on the roster to give them a fresh coat of paint. So
yes,
it had taken a little bit of a step in that direction right before it went under for good.
But the talent wasn't near...
Of course not.
What it is now in NXT.
No, not even close.
It was also a TV product.
Right.
So they had to serve that master, and they didn't do a very good job of it.
That's right.
On
over
sci-fi.
The air. Well, yeah, cable television.
Yeah. I should reference this, and what's interesting is you will probably correct me, although
okay,
this is a milestone in my quote unquote professional career that I'm referencing.
Okay.
I believe this show was the last one I reviewed for Sunday Night Submission.
It was indeed.
Okay, sorry.
It absolutely
sorry,
was.
Sorry, FDH.
Yeah.
Whoops. Seemed like a good idea at the time to cross-promote. Oops, sorry about that.
We were supposed to be on the air together on Sunday nights, and almost as soon as we started, you guys went kaput. But that's another story for another day.
Yeah, you know, and there were a lot of reasons for that.
I know.
One, we were burned out. 2006 was kind of a...
How much bad wrestling can you watch, right?
Shitty year, for lack of a better term. 06. I'll say this, though. I remembered feeling this way back then and watching the show now with, you know, what, 9 years of hindsight.
Mm-hmm.
I think the feeling was somewhat reiterated. I was surprised what a solid show this was. I remember that we had gone through in the SNS days and just basically just pissed and moaned our way through 06, all these issues. And I remember this show came around, and it was one of the few that Ryan and I looked at each other and like, you know, this was a good show. Wow.
Yeah.
Too bad we didn't get a chance to do more of these where we could say, oh, I enjoyed this show.
By the standards of that era, maybe. But, I mean, by just regular baseline pro wrestling standards, I wouldn't say that I enjoyed the show. That
really?
Would be a big overstatement.
Wow.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Wow. I like this show. I don't think it is – it's certainly not. Let me correct that right away, qualify this.
Mm-hmm.
It is certainly nowhere near the heights of the 2000 or 01 shows. It's
absolutely
nowhere near that. But honestly, there aren't many others that we've talked about as a show, top to bottom. Forget about just the Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think this Rumble's very good. We'll get to that. But I don't think top to bottom as a show, there are too many other Rumble pay-per-views that were infinitely better than this one.
Well, no.
This has two very good matches on it.
I've got the Royal Rumble match itself probably middle of the spectrum to slightly above average,
okay,
slightly. But, I mean, the show itself, I don't know, because I've only really rated the matches themselves. The show itself, you know, compared to some of the other fart fests that I've sat through so far, 06 and some of the other ones, I mean, you know, better than some, better than the mid-90s ones, obviously, but I wouldn't call it better than the late 90s or even early 90s ones.
See, you and I kind of had a disagreement on those late 90s ones. fans. Yeah. Particularly 99, we got into a rather heated debate, if I remember. It got very personal
we did indeed.
Some point.
Yes.
Look,
things were
the
said.
Era, the era is clearly not as hot, and if you want to talk about, you know, Raw and the general state, and look, things get quite dark, obviously, for the company by the latter half of 2007. Sure, 2007 as a year does not stack up to those peak Attitude Era years.
I do.
And 06 did this show no favors with a weak building. But I think as a show, this was a pretty effective show. You had, compared to 06, the brand split was... It had a lot of the same issues that we complain about, where they weren't developing guys on the different brands enough. But at least on this show, you had three well-defined champions. And you had a feeling they were the three guys the company, for better or worse, wanted to build around.
Right.
And I had no problem with that. Now, two of the three title matches on the show aren't very good. But you at least had the feeling with this show, compared to the 06 one, they had direction. And when I watch these Rumble shows, that's largely what I'm evaluating. Are they executing a direction well? That's the most important thing. And I think they did have one. Now, we should point out there was a major injury before this show that affected the booking of it. Triple H.
That's right.
Will not be here. He tore his quad for a second time, I believe, although I don't know because I didn't sit in all those meetings, but everything that I had read and all implications said that he was going to win this Rumble originally. So they did have to change that.
And then he was going to get the rematch with Cena at WrestleMania.
I do know that that
HBK
was on the books.
Was a placeholder. Yeah,
yeah, HBK, his buddy, and DX was just a placeholder. They even said that on the HBK DVD, the real long one, that he essentially took Triple H's spot
right
at WrestleMania. So I'll believe that. And with the three well-defined champions, you had to then create some sort of top contender. Actually, you had to create multiple top contenders
right
for the various championship matches at WrestleMania. And what I liked about the Rumble, and we'll get to it when we break down the match, is you really didn't know who was going to win this one compared to other ones. There, we talked about this once they introduced, all the way back in 93, the gimmick of the winner of this challenges for the title match. It somewhat limits the pool of possible winners. I'm not saying the pool was huge here, but I did feel that more than most, there was an unknown factor that worked in this Rumble.
Well, and that's the thing, too, is that you now have, theoretically on paper, three major titles. So,
but no one is going to challenge for the CW title.
Well, true. But it's a thing where, by this point in time, I think we had gotten to where, clearly, Cena with the WWE Championship, that had been established as the preeminent title. The world title was below it. So, where you're right about this, and where in subsequent years, like 2011 with Sheamus, where we could, or 2012, we could still be surprised because the stakes aren't as high. You can have somebody, a little bit of a surprise, win and challenge for the belt that doesn't mean as much as the biggest belt. By the same token, it also devalues what it means to win the Royal Rumble. So it's six of one, half dozen of another.
Luckily, it was a strong winner here. Again, we'll get to that.
It was.
And I do want to touch on something you just said because it's a problem. And it's something I brought up when we talked about 06. They shouldn't have, but they definitely did, made it a point to have one title stronger than the other. That's not the point of having a split brand. You should have two equally strong titles, theoretically. And when they did the Cena-Batista flip-flop in the summer of 05, they really were saying, hey, Cena's the guy, not Batista. And they doubled down on that, and this is part of the reason why I cut the split happens part off here. They doubled down on the reinforcing that Cena's title is more important when, despite who wins this Rumble, they still put Cena on last at WrestleMania.
Well, as they did in 2006, because Ray won
the
world
title
the year before, the world title match shot. Yeah,
and
it was,
and we
it
always
was Cena.
Knew that Raw was the preeminent brand and stuff, but I think that, and it was better for SmackDown to have Batista back and as the champion.
But it wasn't. It was a combination of Raw is the flagship show, as they've always said.
Yeah.
But Cena, by this point, It's no
they
longer
were building
a matter
the
of,
promotion around him.
Exactly.
Which is,
it's not Cena and Batista. It's becoming, although they're not making it obvious on air, but if you're watching, you can see it. It's becoming Cena is the guy by early 07.
Which is why I would argue that the brand split should have been ended sooner, because if you want to do that with Cena, okay.
Right.
But it only cheapens him then to have other champions.
It does indeed. The other thing, too, I want to touch on this real briefly before you get to the card, because
I love, by the way, how you take your notes on the back of an envelope.
It's just sort of become a tradition of mine. Yeah, I could. That
so
leaves
how
you about,
small do you write?
I write fairly small and fairly messy, but I can read my handwriting here. I have filled up the one side of this envelope in a little bit. I should have stopped to consider that on the dark side of the envelope, I can't read my writing as well. But
by the way,
such
is
life.
Strict follower of the Constitution that you are.
Yes, I am.
Is that written with a a feather pen there or whatever or what? Or
Liberty, bro.
Do you dip in ink? Do you re-dip in ink as you're taking the notes?
Liberty, bro. I should. But here, it's
good
so
Lord.
Funny you mention that, because I'm about to get to a point, quite frankly, about Donald Trump, because you were talking about
God,
the state
why?
Of the product.
Please, not that.
Well, here's why. Because there's been some revisionism in history that, and this, you can find this on places like PWO and DVDVR, that the product was hotter than people gave it credit for in early 07, maybe about ready to be poised for another break into the mainstream that didn't happen, but that the Trump thing, which in retrospect, it makes me laugh. Everybody says Trump and Vince is what drew the house. If you were watching, but if you're watching the product at the time, it was more so the two world title matches, I thought.
No, there's no doubt that Trump and Vince drew that.
Well, okay.
There's no doubt about that. I don't think there's any denying
that. I never got that sense. I got the sense that it was Batista, well, Undertaker, and that it was Cena HBK.
No,
but that's
no,
all right.
It did do a monster number on pay-per-view.
It did.
And most people would owe that to Donald Trump and the stipulation of the haircut.
Well,
at WrestleMania.
And I will say this,
I'll
too.
Say this. What hurt that WrestleMania's legacy,
right,
because it did do well business-wise, is that a number of the stars, forget about Cena and Batista, but there were other guys they were attempting to build,
right,
did not pan out. Namely, two guys you see in title matches on this show, Bobby Lashley,
right,
who they had earmarked,
yeah,
for a run at the top.
7 months later, he'd be done.
And
yeah.
And Mr. Kennedy, who had a disastrous 2007,
well, that's
quite
it.
Frankly.
That's exactly it. But see, the thing of it is that I thought was interesting, I made a note of this, there was no mention of Donald Trump on this show. That angle had yet to start. I don't even know if they'd thought of the angle yet. So it was kind of interesting that something that you're saying drew the house, lot of people say drew the house, it wasn't even a part of this show, which is really kind of interesting to me. I will say, too, that the whole thing, the setup for it, the build of it, I said this before, that I thought you needed to have, if you're using it to try to establish Lashley, you have Trump cut promos about, this guy's huge, he's the future of wrestling, as opposed to, this is some guy I'm getting to fight for me. And, you know, you've said before, well, Rick, you know, it worked anyways, but I think they could have drawn more money
with
it.
Did I say that?
You said that. You said, Rick, you're nitpicking, that and you even said
on tape? When did I say this?
I think we were doing the WrestleMania history.
God, you remember a lot of things.
Yeah,
I don't remember anything.
I remembered it. You said I was a nitpicker, and I said they should have had him cutting promos.
Oh, it absolutely could have been done better, but it did work.
You said to me, how's Donald Trump going to go cut a promo? I said, he cuts promos all the time. And you said, that's about him and his stuff and whatever. He can't cut wrestling promos. And I disagreed with you.
No, I agree
after
with myself.
After watching him on the presidential campaign.
No, he can cut a great promo for himself. I also think he's better than that. I think Trump's promo work has improved since 07.
Well, maybe he's better on the stick since
then.
Well,
his message is
maybe he's
nosedive. Jesus Christ.
On the stick.
By the way, can we not talk about Donald Trump? I was in a good mood when we started this. I don't want to talk about Donald
Trump.
But
he's part of the history of this year. I just also want to say,
yeah,
too,
not this show, though. Like you said, you wouldn't have known anything about Donald Trump.
But I find it. But this is always about the setup to WrestleMania.
Yes,
to me,
okay,
it's noteworthy
fine.
That he's not a part of it, but
well,
that's
okay. I mean, you could compare that with, say, Mike Tyson, who was a more successful celebrity.
But it was, and tomorrow night on Raw, he'll be here.
Well, no,
confront.
He was at the Rumble, because that's when he cut
right.
his infamous
that's
Cold
right.
Stone
oh, okay.
promo.
That's
speaking
right.
of
that's
guys
right.
who can't cut wrestling promos. Anyway,
by the way, every time I go buy a Cold Stone creamery, I'm obliged to go Cold Stone, Cold Stone.
Yeah, I do that too. That's sad, people. You want to break down the show?
Let's do it.
Okay, we open with the Hardys versus Eminem.
Okay.
What I thought was a solid tag team match.
Cosplaying the Rock and Rolls in the Midnights of the 80s.
Not as good as that.
Notes.
Yeah, but I got that feeling. It was,
yeah.
It was a longer match than I think, which is certainly welcome. They gave him time.
Yeah.
It's not quite as, what's the word I'm looking for here? It's not as fast-paced, and there's not as many high spots as maybe you think.
Right.
I mean, these guys were involved in a ladder match, I think, in December. That played into this a little bit. Mercury had a face mask on.
Right.
I think his nose legitimately busted in that, if I remember.
That's right.
And they did an angle where Eminem injured Hardy's jaw. They gave him the snapshot, which was a really cool move on the cement. That was an angle, by the way. They showed this before the match.
Mm-hmm.
That was an angle that in the old, I mean, not to be like get off my lawn guy, in the old days, that would have kept you out for weeks and they would have played
it up. That's right.
Here it was just something like, oh, the guy was back a week later.
Well, yeah.
And we'll play it up. But whatever. What I found interesting about this, and I was kind of confused because a lot of this era I struggle to remember. It's funny.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff that happened in like 1990 I can recall like that. Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. This happened then. That was it. Because everything, it was sort of a less is more approach.
Right.
Here they did a lot of things and it's easier to forget stuff. But the partners in this match were on different brands. And it took me a minute to pick. I actually had to look that up on Wikipedia to figure out what was going on. So Jeff was the IC champion and on Raw, and he had won the title from Nitro, John Morrison, and they had been feuding. But Mercury and Matt Hardy were SmackDown guys.
Yeah.
And this just was kind of an inter-promotional match where they reunited both teams who had been working together on – they had worked the horrible December to Dismember pay-per-view.
Right.
And they worked in that, I think it was a four-way at whatever the SmackDown pay-per-view was in December. What is that, Armageddon or something?
I think so, yeah.
So it was kind of interesting, I guess, for because this is a tri-brand pay-per-view now. I guess it was okay to have them on there, but it was unique. I had to look this up. I was like, what's going on here?
Yeah, because they were referencing it in the commentary. I have a different take on what you just said there, and that is that the brand split, when it did finally go away, and again, the brand split, that's maybe the major reason you're ending this era here, because this was the year that it got a lot softer after this. In the end, they stopped having it because it stopped making any sense, and it was for a long time the death of a thousand cuts. It was no one big thing, but it was a million small things, and it was things like this. We need to get these four guys in a match on pay-per-view. Let's just contrive to get them out there, and we'll worry about it later. And it's things like this that eroded the integrity of the brand split.
The fact that it was a Raw and SmackDown guy teaming up against a Raw and SmackDown, they didn't, while they pushed it in the commentary, it didn't seem like a huge deal.
Well, yeah. I mean, but versus a couple of years ago, you brought this to my attention. The year that in the Rumble, the four guys faced each other.
Oh, that got over huge in 05. Yeah, that got over huge.
2 years later, look at this.
Yeah,
it's just a fart and a thunderstorm that you got four guys here, you know, different brands and whatever.
I should mention Jim Ross, after a one-year sabbatical, is back with the company and on commentary here.
That's right. He was back. I have a note that at ringside at different points here, Molina was screaming in a key that had previously only been heard by Batista.
Oh, no. I wondered who was going to reference that. I felt terrible for Morrison when I watched this. I was
I like him a lot.
This was after that, too.
Johnny Mundo these days, doing fine work.
Decent-looking guy, too. He should have.
Absolutely.
I can't believe he didn't sock Batista. He lost a lot of respect in the locker room, they say, for that.
How wild must she be to have him put up with all that? You know what I mean? Jesus.
But
she's not even the hottest diva.
I don't know. Well, JR did have a line in here. Well, you know, I don't make a lot of women yell, so I don't know. That which was amusing. As was he. It's funny because now they're told, the announcers are told, never mention the refs by name.
Right.
He's just the referee. He certainly name-dropped Jack Doan quite a few times in this match,
That was jarring.
Unfortunately, though, this was sort of like that period where JR would get names mixed up all the time, and he kept screwing up Nitro and Mercury, and I kept yelling at them, no, that's Nitro, damn it, not Mercury. But anyway, this match was pretty good.
Uh-huh.
I didn't think it was as good as the Rockers Orient Express match in 1991, just for a frame of reference. I thought it was close.
Yeah. 6-1, half dozen of another, I guess.
There was a good spot where Nitro avoided the poetry in motion with a sort of sloppy lob at a straw cradle, but I thought it was kind of unique. Hardys go over with the blind tag swanton bit that they did a lot in tag matches. And this was fine. This was really good. They gave it plenty of time, which is fine. Both these teams were very good. Eminem took most of the match. There were heat segments on both Jeff and Matt.
Right.
There was a false tag. But, no, it was good. Right team won. You could tell kind of early, though, the Hardys were going to win because Eminem was dominating so much. did play up the Matt jaw injury. They were working on him a lot. I have no complaints with this. It was a very solid opener in the lone non-world title match of the undercard.
Yeah, it was what it was. Before the next match, they had some kind of a goofy backstage thing here. Edge, Orton, Booker.
Show you mine if you show me yours. I feel that we'd seen that joke before on one of these backstage kits where the one where they, you know, what they have is they're drawing numbers for the Rumble.
Right.
One, you know, they both pull their numbers out and they're holding them all. I'll show you mine if you show me yours. And then King Booker shows up and says, tell me you just didn't say that. Kelly was there.
Today that would be Ron Simmons with a damn.
He did that later in the show.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Because Kelly, who was the, you know, the token diva they had running the running the draw, picked up the two balls. She's like, these are the biggest balls I've ever seen. And Ron Simmons showed up with damn. It just seemed very contrived and lame. That first match, I'd give that like 3.25 stars, I think, just if we're keeping track of that.
I'd go a quarter to a half under that probably.
Oh, wow. You're a tough guy.
Yeah.
So we have three title matches to talk about now. First time ever. Three world title matches, I should say.
Yeah.
Bobby Lashley, not Lindsey Trump, versus Test is your ECW title match. Right off the bat, problem number one with ECW. You've used this before,
mm-hmm.
and I liked it a lot.
Okay.
The idea of a nuke push or a microwave push, right? You call
it? Yep.
When all of a sudden this guy is, who's been doing nothing for a long time, is now supposed to be perceived as a big threat.
Test was about 4 or 5 months into this, though, in all fairness.
Okay. But he was also, in all fairness,
mm-hmm.
6 years removed from his peak.
Yeah.
Seven.
He'd been badly misused.
He'd been, I mean,
pigeonholed as a mid-carder.
Yes. Well, and a bit tricky.
A very good working big man. I don't feel
like
that gets said enough.
That's fine. Mark Henry, the year before, his work had dramatically improved over time. But you can't erase the fact that for 6, 7, 8 years, you watch this guy and you become less and less invested in him. And what really hurt ECW as a brand here is this was a guy, Test,
mm-hmm.
who had been mid-card for life on both Raw and SmackDown. All of a sudden, he moves to this third brand, and it just comes across as third rate. It's like, oh, God, you're telling me, like, this guy who was a nothing on Raw and SmackDown is a big play, is the quote-unquote impact player in ECW? It just made ECW look bad.
Not only that, I mean, from my perspective, being a work rate guy, Test, not good enough to carry Bobby Lashley to a good match.
No, Lashley,
this is one of these bad combos.
You could tell he was still pretty green.
Yeah, they like, who's going to carry who here? Test is the better worker, but not good enough.
He was even greener than Cena.
Yeah.
Certainly greener than Cena.
A lot greener than Cena,
when Cena won the title and he moved to Raw.
Right.
Remember, they tried to mask his weaknesses, and it kind of backfired because he would get booed a lot.
Right.
By putting him in there with good workers like Angle or Jericho.
Yeah, or Edge.
Yeah. They didn't do that here with Lashley, and this match, first of all, has an atrocious ending with a countout.
Right.
They built to a TV match, which that's like a WCW TNA like
blow off on TV. I don't understand it.
So this didn't work. By the way, there was certainly a lot of acting on Mr. Test here.
Yeah.
Who seemed bigger than he'd been in previous years.
Well, yeah.
Just saying.
Look, I mean, it's... It's not even that controversial to say, although neither one of us feels good about talking about it, but what you're talking about, part of the reason he's not here today.
Yes.
A lot of these guys just had issues.
It is. I'm just saying, like, you know, and it sucks that that's like...
We're just acknowledging
people.
That plays
a role.
We're not making fun of them. We're acknowledging
it. That plays a role in the microwave push.
Yeah.
Oh, all of a sudden he's super big now. This, by the way, this only got 7 minutes, a count out finish. Like, so what happened was Lashley... By the way, Lashley, I should mention this, he did Lesnar's box jump in his ring entrance.
That's right. He did.
Are you surprised he never came back? He's never come back? Because what's funny is with his athletic background, I think Lesnar versus Lashley now,
mm-hmm.
with what I'll say is kind of a smarter audience, or maybe I should say an audience that is more willing to grasp outside athletic achievements, certainly the emergence of UFC during the time period between, well, UFC was already a big deal here in 07, but, you know, how the UFC's kind of changed the perception of how we view these kind of athletes. Don't you think, like, Lesnar versus Lashley would do huge business?
No, because
really,
Lashley's lost. You're putting me in a situation here for some alliteration. Lashley's lost a lot of luster in TNA, as everybody does.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that's true. But God, I don't know. He was just. I'll tell you what. As much as everyone, and 95% of the time, they're right for doing it. Bitches about Vince's big man fetish.
Yeah.
My God, Lashley was an impressive physical specimen.
He was.
He was that one. He was that 5% or whatever it was, where you're like, okay, I buy this guy is the main thing. He just looked the part. But, and I was willing, as green as he was, to accept him in this role.
I just wasn't, because he was such a crappy worker at that point. I don't like seeing guys get, you know, pushed way above their ability level. I want to touch on something you mentioned off air, because I think it raises a good point about the overall state of the product. And you said you could have more easily accepted a microwave push for somebody against Lashley that was a newcomer, that didn't have the stink of years of mid-card on him. And I said to you that this is one of my recurring themes as we're talking about the 2000s here, the lost generation, the biggest drought in company history as far as developing new talent and getting them to stick. Because after the class of 02, which was extraordinary, from there until when they signed...
That's Cena, Orton, Batista.
And Lesnar.
Yes.
After those, and to whatever extent, Shelton Benjamin, although he didn't pan out on that level. From there until... CM Punk likes to take credit in 06, but for what it was really much more so Daniel Bryan in 2009, where they started going the route of bringing in the indie guys. This was an entire era of, because remember we talked about it in past Rumbles, Luther Reigns and Heidenreich and all these guys, you had to be big, you had to have tribal tats, you had to this, you had to that, whatever, and that, again, it was just a horrible kind of a deal in terms of the company having guys who could get over and who could become guys who would be credible in this spot. Test was still way more credible than anybody that they had, and that's the sad part about this. And that,
they didn't think the CCW thing through, in my opinion. They just didn't have the legs. Now, to be fair, RVD, it was supposed to be a vehicle to get him over, but, you know, RVD kind of screwed their plans up.
That's right.
As I unprofessionally try to untangle my cord here. But give me a second here. I just wanted to bring this up.
We're working through this in admirable fashion, but yeah, make your point.
End of this match is horrible and does this thing no favors, where Lashley's beaten on him, Test gets out of the ring and just takes a count out, like Money Inc. Natural Disasters WrestleMania 8 style. And
except they kept the titles and he didn't get to win the title.
What made it worse for me, and that's a good point, what made it worse for me though is Lashley immediately gets him back in the ring and kicks his ass and gets his heat back.
Yeah.
So you don't necessarily want to see a rematch.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, he just kicked his ass. Why would I want to see this anymore? It just was a bad finish. It was not, as they say, a good kind of heat.
Let's compare and contrast this to 3 years ago. We talked about it, the one-match feud between Eddie and Chavo at the Royal Rumble. That was a thing where Eddie did a post-match beatdown on Chavo, thus emphasizing, yes, this is the end of the feud, nothing more to see here. Very similar to what you're talking about, but they thought in their heads, well, Lashley didn't get the pinfall, so people won't think it's a blow-off. But like you said, the beatdown on Test afterwards established this feud is over. This feud must not continue.
And unlike Eddie Chavo, wasn't a lot of interest going in.
Oh, no. Let's not even compare it in terms of work rate. So this match was not good.
No, it wasn't. I wouldn't even give it a star.
No. I would agree.
There was a Vince Cena segment where Cena was selling his rib injury from Raw at the hands of Umaga. Vince says, I can't see you being champion much longer. Let's move on.
Right.